This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Mpuga, and here's what's coming up.
First, it has shown that France is still very close to authoritarian regimes. And second, President Macron has also shown himself as being once again very arrogant with an African head of state.
That's Niagale Bagayoko of the African Security Sector Network, saying French President Macron's visit to Africa can't be seen as a success. Also, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announces a new humanitarian assistance for Ethiopia. At least 3,000 people have been displaced in fresh fighting against Boko Haram along the Nigerian-Cameroon border. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed discussed efforts to reach sustainable peace in Tigray on Wednesday as both sides seek to mend diplomatic ties damaged by the war there. Reuters reports that during a 2.5-hour meeting in Addis Ababa, Blinken and Abiy also talked about the importance of accountability for the atrocities perpetuated by all parties during the war. Paul Matibe is a scholar, journalist, and media commentator based in Washington, D.C. Earlier, I asked her about the importance of the U.S.-Ethiopian relationship.
The United States and the Biden administration and all of his team, including his executive branch, in other words, members of his cabinet, are saying that this is a very important trip. In fact, if we take a look at how many times U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has traveled to Africa, in the continent in general, what I can confirm to you is that he is now the most traveled Secretary of State. If you take a look at the last 6 years and compare it back to former Secretary of State Michael Pompeo and former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, why do I say that? This is because as of January 31st, so as of the end of January, he had already clocked in excess of 68,000 kilometers. That's about 42,000 miles just in trips that he made to engage African countries. That is an indicator to show us what this trip means. Now, in terms of the trip to Ethiopia, yes, he has traveled to Ethiopia, and he will be traveling to Niger. The intention here, from what we're hearing from the State Department, is that this is following, remember, there was this landmark peace deal, which was signed in Pretoria last November, with the support of the African Union, of Kenya, and South Africa. And what the United States has been telling us is that for them, they see themselves as have been playing a key role in facilitating that peace agreement. So this trip to Ethiopia is about the cessation of hostilities, and that you will see as part of his agenda. So Ethiopia is an important meeting. About the cessation of hostilities, this is what they have been telling us, that today, March 15, they will discuss, and I'm going to quote the State Department. They said, quote, they will discuss implementation of the cessation of hostilities agreement to advance peace and promote transitional justice in northern Ethiopia. That was disclosed by the State Department.
Ethiopia and the United States have had a close relationship in the past until recently when the Tigray conflict happened. But how do you think the China-Ethiopia ties factor into this relationship?
Well, certainly we cannot discount that China is a global power. What U.S. officials have been saying is they are not wanting to say that they're asking any country to choose between the United States or China or Russia or any other relationship. That is the narrative that they are putting forward. But what we do know is that on every part of Secretary Blinken's agenda, one aspect that will be part of the discussions is going to be the war in Ukraine. Okay, so certainly the Kremlin's war on Ukraine is an agenda item, as will be things like security, stability, and regional conflict. But in terms of China, certainly if there are overlapping issues, that may come up. But the Biden officials' narrative is they are not trying to say that they're asking any country to choose.
Given Ethiopia's strategic positioning on the Horn of Africa and past cooperation with the U.S., especially in fighting terrorism, do you think that this session can achieve what they set out to achieve?
Well, I think certainly that is the hope. So the United States and Ethiopia have had a long relationship, and they view it as a longstanding, important relationship because they've got issues both of mutual interest. Ethiopia is an important country in that region where it is. Both countries have maintained diplomatic relations since 1903. So this is a relationship that's been going on for a long time.
That was Paul Matibe, a scholar, journalist, and media commentator. She spoke with me from Washington. For more than 40 years, Morocco has been in a dispute with a group known as the Polisario Front over the disputed territory of Western Sahara. The Polisario Front seeks independence from the territory now under Moroccan control, and Algeria has long backed it. The issue has created new tensions between Morocco and Algeria, and now some regional analysts say Algeria's relationship with Iran may complicate the issue. There are questions about whether more attention is needed from the United States and other governments, which tend to see it as a dispute between neighbors without wider implications. Ambassador Lincoln Bloomfield, former Assistant Secretary of State for Political and Military Affairs, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shenawi there may be a greater need to counter the relationship between Algeria and Iran.
I think it does merit more attention, yes. And I think so far, I don't think that the national security communities in countries around the world have studied this or are aware of what is happening. This is an expansion of Iran's tentacles and its destabilizing activity. For Algeria, they're making a mistake. You can see that the president of Algeria has been invited to Tehran, has previously, before he was president, has spent time in Iran. But Iran is now becoming more isolated. There will be more exposure of all of the things they have done to undermine security in the world, mostly closer to home. But I think this in Europe, there was a vote in the European Parliament 2 weeks ago that was almost 99% to put the Revolutionary Guards on the terrorism list. This is unbelievable. When you look back to 2015, Europe was so happy to be promoting the nuclear deal with the regime in Iran. How things have changed. So Algeria is isolating itself diplomatically. I think they're making a big mistake. There's also talk about a money laundering operation with Hezbollah and the Polisario using some banks in Spain. These are not issues that will help Algeria in the future. And so I do think this issue will be studied more closely. And I think that Morocco will have some success as it asks its friends for help. I think the Abraham Accords rapprochement with Israel is probably giving them very timely information about Hezbollah and about Iran that Morocco needs for its own security right now. So this is a growing issue. And the security of Africa is a growing concern as well. And the question is, who is playing a positive role for the future of the people in Africa? And Russia is part of the destabilization effort. And as you saw, the Wagner Group is causing trouble in the Pan-Sahel. And so we need to pay more attention to this, yes.
But do you foresee an expanding Iranian security threat to the Sahel region and Africa at large?
It's a hard question because it's probably funded with drug money. If you look at the Iranian currency, it is collapsing. If you look at the Iran economy domestically, it is moving into poverty for millions of Iranians. So where is this money coming from? And this, to me, is part of the picture that 80 million Iranians are starting to see more clearly. So if they see that the Revolutionary Guards are able to manufacture more enriched uranium, the centrifuges, and then more ballistic missiles, and now drones, and they can export them to non-state actors like the Polisario. The question in Iran is, why isn't that money paying for medicine and school and security and environmental water. There are so many issues that are causing hardship inside Iran. I think that this points to an unstable situation for Iran itself.
That was Ambassador Lincoln Bloomfield, former Assistant Secretary of State for Political and Military Affairs, speaking with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi. French President Emmanuel Macron's visit to Central Africa this month has received mixed reviews, with some skeptical of his latest reset of French relations with the continent. It's part of a broader challenge Macron faces in asserting French influence, not just in Africa, but also in Europe, amid a fast-changing political landscape marked by the war in Ukraine and Russia's growing influence overseas. From Paris, Lisa Brandt reports for VOA.
A little music in Kinshasa to end President Macron's four-nation visit to Central Africa in early March, but not everything finished on a light note. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is not a former French colony, some protested Macron's visit. Macron may face an uphill road selling his revamped Africa strategy, one he put to the test in his latest trip to the continent, which also included stops in Gabon, Angola, and the Republic of Congo. Niagali Bakayoko is chair of the African Security Sector Network.
It cannot be seen as a success, this visit, because first, it has shown that France is still very close to authoritarian regimes. And second, President Macron has also shown himself as being once again very arrogant with African head of state.
In February, Macron outlined an Africa policy marked by a reduced military footprint and balanced and respectful relations. In its former colonies, France is competing for influence against countries like China and Russia. Closer to home, French influence is being questioned in the European Union. Some analysts see the war in Ukraine shifting Europe's power center eastward, away from traditional heavyweights France and Germany, to countries like Poland with tougher views on Russia. These countries and Ukraine have criticized Macron's call for maintaining dialogue with Moscow and considering its need for security guarantees. Amanda Paul is a senior policy analyst at the European Policy Center.
We've seen the eastern flank, the Baltics, Poland, etc., really take a lead role in pushing for a strong response to Russia's war in Ukraine. Countries such as France, for example, I wouldn't say they've been sidelined, but some of the policies that the French have had in the past vis-a-vis Russia haven't been popular.
Critics say Macron's push for a more autonomous European defense has failed to gain traction.
The Europeans are very good at talking, particularly the French, but actually, you know, moving from talk to action is a different thing.
Still, other analysts believe France will remain an important player in a Europe defined by more than the Ukraine conflict. Martin Kense, the German Marshall Fund's Paris office.
With all the other issues that are fundamental to the EU influence in the world, in fiscal issues, immigration, energy market, relation with the US, this is still something that happens between Paris, Berlin, Brussels, and a couple others. This is not something that had shifted to the East.
The Ukraine war has made defense a top European priority. Analysts like Kinsey believe Macron's vision of a more militarily independent EU may ultimately resonate if next year's U.S. elections bring in a leadership less committed to the transatlantic alliance and to investing in a potentially long and costly conflict in Ukraine. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. The force fighting Boko Haram militants along the Nigerian-Cameroonian border says at least 3,000 people have been displaced in fresh fighting. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Displaced persons at Minawawu, a refugee camp on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, say the number of people seeking humanitarian assistance in the camp increases by the day. Isaac Luka, president of Nigerian refugees at Minawawu, says the current influx caused by hunger and gun battles is making living conditions that were already bad in the camp even worse. He spoke to VOA via a messaging app from Minawawu on Wednesday.
They are Nigerians coming from the host community around the border. They were given a portion of a land to start cultivating food. But this year, the season was not good for the harvest. And a recurrent attacking at the border pushed them to the camp. They have their relation in the camp. They share the little they have. Some go selling firewood to earn something for their children.
Luka fled Nigeria's Borno State in June 2014. After Boko Haram terrorists killed more than 20 people in his village, including his family. He said host communities around the camp are also overwhelmed by the number of civilians escaping hunger and battles between Cameroon government troops and Boko Haram fighters along the northern border with Chad and Nigeria. Tudje Vumu is the highest government official in Mayomo Skuta district. He says the Multinational Joint Task Force of Lake Chad Basin Commission, or MJTF, has increased its presence on the border. The force has troops from Nigeria, Niger, Cameroon, and Chad.
La secte Boko Haram qui sévit dans l'État fédéral.
Vumu says for about 2 weeks, there have been intense battles between Cameroon government troops and Boko Haram militants on both sides of the Cameroon-Nigeria border. Vumu says several military posts have been erected to face Boko Haram militants hiding and harassing civilians in villages on both sides of the border. MNGTF announced in February that the month of March will be dedicated to wiping out remaining Boko Haram fighters in the border area. The force says several attacks have been launched on Boko Haram strongholds, but does not say how many jihadists have been killed or wounded. It also says at least 3,000 people have been displaced by this month's fighting. The Cameroon government says civilians should assist troops fighting the jihadists by deporting strangers in their villages. The government says it has remobilized militias to assist with the ongoing battles against Boko Haram by reporting strangers and armed men hiding in the bush to government troops. Olivier Guillaume Bier is the UNHCR representative in Cameroon. Speaking to Cameroon State broadcaster CRTV this week, he said humanitarian conditions for displaced persons is concerning.
We have 2,500 people in the transit center, which has a capacity of 300. These people are supposed to be registered and then go to the Minawawu refugee camp, which is already very saturated, 67,000 people in the camp. So these are our challenges. We need more resources to be able to register and document them, to provide health care, increase the number of classrooms, to alleviate the suffering of this population.
During an April 2022 visit to Cameroon, the UN's refugee chief, Filippo Grandi, vowed to give more support to displaced persons and refugees fleeing violence and natural disasters. However, the UN said it received only 23% of the $100 million it needed to take care of the growing needs of refugees in the Central African state. Boko Haram attacks broke out in Nigeria in 2009 before spreading to neighboring countries, including Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. More than 36,000 people have been killed, mainly in Nigeria, and 3 million have fled their homes, according to the United Nations. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Opposition supporters in Senegal organized the second day of protests today against what they say are dictatorial practices by President Macky Sall, which his government denies. They also accuse Sall's government of arbitrary arrests and oppose his seeking an unconstitutional third term in next year's elections. More than 10,000 people hit the streets of Senegal's capital Tuesday for the first day of protests, as Anika Hamashklag reports from Dakar.
Opposition supporters, adorned in Senegal flag-themed regalia, streamed onto a field late Tuesday afternoon, chanting, "Macky Sall is a dictator." Many wore T-shirts with messages of support for who they hope will be Senegal's next president, opposition leader Ousmane Sonko. Sonko is facing libel charges in court Thursday for allegedly accusing the Minister of Tourism of embezzlement. He's also facing separate charges for rape, which his supporters say were trumped up to stop him running again. Sonko's arrest a year ago ignited a week of rioting that led to the deaths of 14 people. 36-year-old Debouch Nian was one of few female protesters at Tuesday's rally. She says, "We're very tired of Macky Sall and want him to leave, no matter the price." "The Senegalese people are tired," Nian says, "tired of suffering, of poverty, of unemployment." She says the economy is not working and all we have are problems. 22-year-old protester Abdou Baha Mbodji says he was mostly satisfied with Macky Sall's time in office, especially with his investments in infrastructure. But he says that's not the point. Mbodji says it's not about whether we like Macky Sall. He says what bothers us is the fact that he wants to force a third term. That's the only issue. President Sall has not yet said if he'll run for a third term in next year's election, which would go against the two-term limit set in Senegal's constitution. Sonko came in third in the 2019 presidential election and has since grown in popularity, mainly among Senegalese youth. Senegal's government denies persecuting the opposition or moving away from democracy. But protests have erupted at times throughout the country over the last year after government crackdowns on protests and arrests of opposition leaders. Samir Daoud is the regional director for Amnesty International's West and Central Africa office.
What we are seeing in Senegal is an increasing restriction and reduction of the civic space. Senegal used to be seen as a model for democracy and freedom, so this authoritarian drift we are seeing is, of course, raising serious concerns.
West Africa has suffered a string of coups in the last few years, and instability in Senegal, long considered the region's most solid democracy, could ripple beyond its borders. Tensions are only expected to grow as the country gets closer to the presidential election less than a year from now in February 2024. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
A Paris court has found two French journalists guilty of extortion and blackmail against the King of Morocco. According to Radio France International, Eric Laura and Catherine Gressier sought to extort several million euros from King Mohammed VI in 2015 in exchange for not publishing an embarrassing book on the Moroccan royal family. The court sentenced them to 12 months in prison with a fine of 10,000 euros, about $10,500. Laura, a former correspondent for Radio France and Le Figaro magazine, in 2012 wrote a book on the monarch called The Predator King, which was banned in Morocco. The pair contacted the king's office and accepted $84,000 in an agreement not to write anything more on the country. They later signed a document to a Moroccan lawyer asking for over $1 million in return for not publishing the book. In court, Laura, who is 75, admitted to moral error but denied committing a criminal offense. Gracia, 48, admitted she had been seduced by Morocco's financial offer. The two journalists intend to appeal the sentence. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yeboro, and our engineer tonight, Helen Hadian, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.